Hey mama, and welcome to MILF School. This is the Master Internal Love First School, you little perverts. My name is Julia Kotsiamani, and I am the only love, sex, and relationship coach who works exclusively with single moms. This is the show for you if you want to learn more about dating consciously and expansively around having kids. We get deep and juicy with this one, so it's not one for little ears. So take some time for yourself and buckle up, sister, because it's going to be one wet and wild ride. So hello, mothers and motherfuckers, and welcome to another episode of the MILF School podcast. That's the Mastering Internal Love First podcast. And I have a guest. I haven't had a guest for so long, and I'm really, really excited about this one. We're going to be talking all about the cost of living crisis and how that might affect our lives and our dating lives. And I'm joined by Carly Newman, who is a mum, a single mum, and a coach. And she does lots of activism and campaigns around the cost of living crisis. She's been in the media quite a lot, talking about all things cost of living and how they affect us. So thank you so much for coming on, Carly. It's lovely to have you. And yeah, do you want to just introduce yourself? Tell everyone all about yourself and what you do and who you are.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I'm very excited to be here and to sort of, yeah, have the opportunity to talk to you about this, and just a really interesting perspective on the cost of living crisis. So, I, as Julia said, I'm a single mum to Ezra, who is four, and I work full time in sort of what I refer to as my 9-to-5. But I've also trained and qualified in becoming sort of a coach on the side, and I focus on helping mums, particularly single mums, sort of manage overwhelm and stress and the sort of generally the sort of load that's put onto us. And I sort of try to embed in my work the understanding the sort of expectations and pressures that are also put on us by external things. So, you know, the systems that we're trying to navigate and work within, and things such as the cost of living crisis. So that, you know, I'm trying to like factor in different people's realities and circumstances when also trying to help them. And as you also said, Julia, I'm very passionate about campaigning around the issues that single parents can experience, and at the moment very much so the cost of living crisis and how we're sort of we can be disproportionately impacted by it as single parents.
Yeah, no, I love following your Instagram. I'm gonna leave links to everything down below so everyone can come and follow you, but you have really sort of put yourself out there as a spokesperson, or somebody who is willing to put themselves there and say how it is from your experience as somebody who I think solo parents, rather than, you know, you don't share, you don't co-parent, and that around keeping a job, living in London, trying to afford everything, and it's just been brilliant to watch how you've been exploring that like publicly, because it's obviously, we all hear about it in the media a lot, about the cost of living crisis, but it feels very dehumanized, and it impacts everybody completely differently, obviously, because we're all at different points of wealth and how much we've got coming in. But it has started, I think, to really squeeze people. And as with all things, single parent households have the additional issues that we face. So could you tell us a little bit about like what's going on with the cost of living, and how that kind of impacts single parents particularly, and just sort of like give us a sort of context to this discussion, because we're going to be talking about how that changes the way that people date, how they relate to each other, and all those things. But I think it's really good to have like some grounding in where we sort of are as a society. So
yeah sure. And I guess one of the things, well, a couple of things to say is that obviously my experience is going going to be similar to some and different to others. And I think, although you know, I do find it challenging in lots of ways, I still have you know, a lot more privileges than lots of other people. And you know, there are people who are having to make very difficult choices around like food and food that they're buying for them rather, you know, for their kids rather than themselves. And as we go into winter, that we know that people are going to be making choices about whether they eat or put the heating on. And you know, that isn't my, I'm fortunate enough that that isn't my experience at the moment, but we know that like food bank, the usage of food banks has gone up by almost 70% since the Tories were elected. So that's quite a long period, but there's been a real steep increase recently. The other thing just to say is that when I've been talking about the cost of living crisis to journalists and media, I always try and talk about the sort of like bigger picture and wider context, and that is that childcare is still very expensive. It always has been before the cost of living crisis, and single parents pay that childcare by themselves. We pay the same amount as two parents earning two incomes, you know, and at one point my childcare fees were almost £900 a month for 3 days a week on one income. I also talk about rent in that as well. Rent has obviously always been high, particularly in London where I live. And it is going up because the rental market's gone crazy. But all of these things were already very expensive for us before the cost of living crisis. And like single parents particularly those who might be in a similar situation to me who aren't co-parenting and not necessarily splitting finances in any way are paying the full like price of what is a system that's designed for two people. And even that's expensive. Like all of my friends who are in couples talk about how expensive childcare is and, you know, rent prices and, you know, moving out of London and those kind of things. And so that's for two incomes. The point of single parent households generally is that there is half of that income or one income, you know. And if like me, you're fortunate enough to be in a fairly good job that's paid well, you know, that I mean, the one of the reasons that the media likes to talk to me is because I am in a fairly, you know, well-paid and senior role, but I still rely very heavily on universal credit, because it's not enough to cover like all of the outgoings that we have as single parents. So we're disproportionately impacted in that way. And I think another reason why it impacts us is because as women and mums, but particularly single mums, we are more likely to maybe be working part-time. That was certainly the case for me, to manage childcare, to keep childcare costs down, but also just balance it, because, you know, there's no one else to do pick up and drop off, you know, or any of those things. And just, yeah, so you're more likely to be working reduced hours. You're more likely to be in lower paid jobs to try and build in that flexibility and build in that reduced hours. So it's harder to, you know, manage that as you're going up. And so you're potentially more likely to take jobs that are lower paid potentially because they then offer that flexibility, maybe in shift work, that kind of thing. But even if not, you know, like you're still, I only worked one day less a week than full time up until recently, and that had such a significant impact on my income, just to have that one day and then finish half an hour earlier than normal, just so I could manage that pickup. So single mums are more likely to be working reduced hours or in jobs that are paid less because they've got a level of flexibility, if we can call it that, and therefore have less of an income on an already like single income. And I think the other thing just to say is that I talk about single mums a lot and how it disproportionately impact single mums, because we know that 90% of single parents are mums, are women. And women are already trying to challenge inequalities and imbalance in terms of pay and those kind of things before you bring in being a mum and a single mum. So I think it's just, yeah, that wider context in terms of what's happening. I probably didn't even touch on the cost of living crisis then throw the cost of living crisis on top of that. You know, and I think what's been really important to me is to respond to like very unfair and unrealistic comments that the government have come out with in response to the cost of living crisis. That is their fault to begin with. And how, you know, crap that can make us feel, you know, on top of... You know, so we're not loved by society as it is as single moms generally. And then to be, yeah, hearing things like, you know, we need to be making smarter food choices and buying own brand beans and whatever, just completely dehumanizing us and devaluing us, as if that, you know, hasn't been our experience enough already from society, you know, like, you know, it's your fault, therefore buy own brand beans, as if we're going out buying, you know, I don't know, the Gucci of baked beans, which I guess is Heinz, but yeah.
Yeah, so much of that, so much of that rings true. Obviously, I work with single mums, and I recognise so much of what you're saying in so many of the stories of the women that I work with, and also, you know, friends, and from personal experience. I've kind of been on both sides of it. When my two elder children were very small, and they were preschool, it made no sense for me to work, actually. And I don't mean that in a sort of, oh, I wanted to rest at home with them, but I couldn't afford the two children to go to nursery full time, so that the idea of a full time job was sort of out, unless, you know, I think I calculated it like I needed to earn something like 45 grand a year or something like that to cover the rent bills and the childcare costs. And, you know, I had taken a big career gap to when I was married and had to, you know, I was solo parenting for all intents and purposes. They do see their father, but they see him quite sporadically, normally just at the holidays. And there's no child maintenance. So the full financial burden did fall on me. And at that point, I realized that it made a lot more sense for me to retrain, because if I was enrolled in, at this point it was a postgrad, but if I was enrolled in university, it would cut my council tax bill, and it would, it meant that I could get some access to childcare. So I fit that in around the sort of 3 days a week that I could get until they started school. And it was very tight, and it was very, very difficult. And like you, for most of my working life since having kids, I've needed universal credit to top up. There's been some months where that hasn't been the case, you know, since starting my own business, but it's not. My experience has been that I've had to have fingers in so many pies, you know, doing supply teaching and not being able to take a full-time teaching position because I needed the flexibility to do the drop-offs, and I needed the evenings. I couldn't be marking and staying, you know, I needed to find some way of not taking work home with me so that I could be with my kids. The other side of that is that since just before the pandemic hit, my partner moved in. And so now I do experience a two income situation. And what I think is quite surprising is that it is just as tight.
I can completely believe that.
I think that's partly because obviously our household income has had to go up because we've got another baby, you know, he's there. We've needed to move to a bigger house. The cost of living crisis has had like such a noticeable impact that where I think we would have had a lot more, I would have had a lot more money left over at the end of the month if I'd been dividing it before, it now doesn't feel like that. So I extend, you know, a huge amount of empathy to the difficulty that so many single mums must be facing. And I think it's clear that this will have an impact on how we're dating and how we're forming relationships, because the pressure, and we're not talking about, I kind of want to just address a slight point that, you know, that there's a whole thing on like Reddit and around the internet that anyone who dates for anything material is a gold digger. But we're not really talking about that. We're not talking about dating millionaires. We're talking about like survival. And I think that there must be a big impact on how we are dating just to kind of survive at the moment. I couldn't afford to do what I did 6 years ago now, in terms of retraining to be a teacher, to be a coach. It just wouldn't have been an option with the childcare costs. So yeah, the situation surrounding it is different. And I really wanted to just have a conversation about that difference and how that impacts us. So yeah, in terms of people's sort of social lives and how they spend their free time, and then we can go into like how it impacts sex and relationships. But yeah,
because I think that's a huge part. Sorry to interrupt. And what I want to say is that, you know, I guess I'm not for 1 minute suggesting that if you've got two incomes, that those incomes are, you know, automatically brilliant incomes. You know, that there will be two income households that earn the same amount or less than my one income. And I'm very aware of that. And so I'm, you know, and those, you know, families are going to be struggling, and some two parent families might be struggling more than me and other single parents. But there is something about the fear and anxiety. And I'm not saying that when you, there's two of you, that you don't both feel that. But as you'll know, Julia, like doing it alone, there is that fear and anxiety and burden that you carry by yourself. And when you have no one to share that with, it feels, well, I'm not going to say bigger because it's big, but it feels scary. You're not able to talk about it or rationalize it or work it through with anyone. You're just not able to share any of that. So you're holding in all of that. And as we know as well, that like when you're not able to do that, it can spiral. It can feel worse because it can just feel so heavy. So I think that there's something about, you know, just wanting to share that pressure with someone. And I think that kind of goes across lots of things around single parenting, but that will also definitely feed into the dating and wanting to meet someone, that it isn't just it, there is some very, you know, maybe like black and white clear cut things about this will be very practical for me to have someone live with me. Absolutely. If I'd had someone to split the rent with for the last 3 years, I would have been on holiday three times yet. No, I wouldn't. But you know, but there's that emotional side as well. And I think there's such a like complex picture to all of this that nobody, you know, people, we don't look at enough. I think it's really important to say that, you know, that there will definitely be a practical element, but there's an emotional element as well. Mm. Like in the last, I think maybe 6 months to a year, I've just kind of felt like adulting and parenting, obviously, but just has felt like much more lonelier, and me just been, oh, I wish there was someone to like share this with, whether it be like a parenting thing or like budgeting or just working out how to navigate all of this and be okay with it. And you know, they keep talking about the winter and how bad the winter's going to get, and like the anxiety that will cause for people. But then if you're also on your own with a kid, and if you're already working full time, if you're already working two jobs, if you're already doing the most you can, as you said, got your finger in all the different pies, like I'm working full time and I've got my business on the side that I work in the evening, there is not that option to earn any more. Right. Whereas you kind of, and I don't know if this is true because the grass is always greener, right? But you're like, well, if there was another person, is there the option for them to get another job or a better job or that? But I've, you know, as a single parent, I feel like, well, I've exhausted all my options now. I'm at my cap. There's nothing more I can do apart from like, oh, maybe sell a few more things on eBay. You know, definitely too old for OnlyFans probably. So, you know, like, what are my options now? So I think there's that big emotional like side of wanting to be with someone, to go through this very difficult time and navigate it with them. And the sort of like, yeah, like the desire to do that and the pressure of doing it all on your own, as well as practical. And Just touching on the social side, I think, again, that's a thing that I try and talk to the media about, because obviously the media are more interested in people like not being able to eat and stay warm, which is, obviously the most important thing. But something that is obviously not unique to single parents, but that is, you know, going to be felt very strongly by single parents, is that aloneness and loneliness, and that thing that we're talking about in terms of not having people to share stuff with. And so connection and spending time with people and socializing has become essential to me. It was before the pandemic. It obviously became at the forefront of all of our minds during the pandemic. But I mean, yeah, to some extent, there were times when that was easier as a single parent, because you were socializing on Zoom with your mates and you didn't have to get childcare and you didn't have to spend any money. So you were like, oh, well, this is great. And it's not because of me being a single mom. It's because because we have to. But that's become so important. I think it's so important to our mental health and to our experience and how we experience motherhood and parenthood, and how it feeds into our relationships with our children, right? If we're okay, we're socializing, if we're feeling connected, they're also doing the same. Yeah. And no one is really talking about that or cares about that.
Right.
But of course, that's the first thing to go, because you know, like, of course you're going to stop doing that first, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and if people can't eat and keep their house warm, I mean, they're definitely not socializing. And I don't think it should. I don't think that should be a privilege.
No,
like, we know, especially through the pandemic, that human connection is essential. Like, it's part of, you know, it's up there with our kind of things that we need to survive. Like, it might be a little bit, you know, lower down the pecking order.
Yeah, I completely
agree. Yeah, so interesting to see the impact, whether they'll do any research on the impact of the cost of living crisis on our mental health. But I just think it's so important for mums and single mums to be able to do that and not have a government that make them feel like they don't deserve that, or they're not worthy of that, or, you know, that they just have to settle and make do without that because, you know, it's a cost of living crisis and you're getting universal credit and, you know.
You're sitting pretty. It's had a huge impact on all of us, obviously. Just picking up on what you said about during the pandemic, it my experience was that it sort of got better because didn't have to pay for babysitting, didn't have to like find ways of childcare. And I know for lots of people, actually dating became easier because suddenly there was a sort of level playing field whereby everybody was dating on Zoom and you weren't kind of on the back seat.
Absolutely.
Like, nobody was meeting up. So actually it was a sort of there were lots of positives in terms of being as a single mum around that. Now that that's opened up again, and obviously we're starting to see the state of the world after post-pandemic, during this cost of living crisis, at this kind of 10 years of doom and gloom from the government. I think, as you say, that desire for connection, however low level, however low vibration or whatever it is very tempting. So I kind of want to highlight a couple of the risks around this, because one, it's totally understandable from a material perspective and from an emotional perspective to seek partnership. But I think we need to be having conversations about how that might be making us make slightly weird and or damaging choices. And when you're starved of that connection, when you can't go out because you can't afford a babysitter, so you invite somebody into your home earlier than you might have done otherwise, when you start sleeping with friends or other things like that just because they are accessible, and all the kind of emotional fallout that can cause, it does have an impact on our families and on ourselves. And, you know, despite being totally understandable and I think, you know, fine, I'm not speaking from a place of judgment. I think these things are inevitable and they shouldn't be looked on as, kind of disasters or things that you shouldn't do, because these we're in a time of survival, but just bringing a kind of consciousness to it, just an awareness that this may not lead us to make the very best choices. And, you know, what we might be able to do about that. Because as you said, like when you're struggling to think, oh, how will I pay the rent? You're not thinking, I'll go for a weekend away with my new partner. Like you can't, it's not a thing, yeah. Basically.
Yeah.
So I do think there are huge and kind of varied impacts that this is happening on how we relate to each other, how we meet people, how the speed at which we move relationships on, and what the risks are surrounding that. Yeah, I think the main one for me is that it's really important that you don't speed up the pace of something just because it's difficult, because we all know what happens in this situation. It's not new information, but obviously if you're desperate for connection and you can't afford to go out on dates often, you're going to maybe start hosting at home a bit more. It's really important that we talk about like potential abuse in those situations, what can happen. The absolute flip side of that is that it's going to be much harder for people to leave dynamics that become dangerous and abusive, because
absolutely,
you can't afford to strike out on your own. I think this is not new, and that's quite comforting. I found that quite comforting. And some of my clients found that quite comforting. The idea that actually in only very recent history has anyone dated purely for physical attraction or love. And it's not a new thing. It's also, I was talking about it with a friend last night, who came around for dinner. It's also one of those weird things that unites like the upper class and the working class, like, and is now sort of encroaching on the middle media-ish class. And I think that's why people have started talking about it so much. But, you know, I don't want to sound snide, but I'm not sure that Carrie Johnson is doing it just for the love. You know, I think we have to be, I think we have to be honest with ourselves that people do date for money. That is something that's happened throughout human history, traditionally in the upper classes, to like make good marriage connections, and, you know, with the working classes, survival. So this isn't new. It's just that it's unpalatable, I think, for us to be considering those things. And that's where, as you said, lots of the shame and the stigma comes in, where it's like, oh, these single mums are just dating for a break in the cost of their lives. Do you want to like talk about like that?
Well, shame? I guess it's unpalatable because it's and I say this without knowing, but it's predominantly, or at least it's focused on women, right? So the problem is women. And generally, it's women who are gold diggers. It's women who marry for money. It's women who marry older men for money. And we know that isn't true, especially when you're talking about the upper classes. And you know, we've all seen the Tinder swindler. So we know that isn't true. But it may be that there are more women who do date for those reasons. And because throughout history, we've had no choice, right? And yes, we might have more choice now, but the conditioning over years and years is still with us. And isn't it interesting that we may be going back full circle to a certain extent, that the cost of living crisis and everything else is, you know, we're having to make different choices about, you know, who we, and I think we absolutely can like date people who we want to for the reasons we want to, whether that is, you know, for financial security or, you know, because you find the person very attractive or very kind, whatever. Has the peak of that ended? Because actually it almost took me back to that time where like, oh yeah, you just married someone and they went off to work and you had some kids and they brought home the money and that was it. And are we heading back there because of the cost of living crisis? But yeah, there is a huge amount of shame attached, and I do think that the shame attached to it is because it's aimed at women. Yeah. I think if it was the other way around, because it does happen the other way around, there is no shame attached to it. And you could see from the response of the Tinder Swindler documentary. So more people were outraged by the women who got tricked and thought that they were stupid or naive or whatever than they were from the man's behavior. Right. And I was like, I think most of you have missed the point of this, but okay. and so there is still a lot of shame, and I think that that then doesn't help necessarily you have a level of an awareness and acceptance, which then means that you might not be making like the best choices all of the time, because I think having an awareness and being able to accept certain things then means that you are more in control and you can then make decisions accordingly. Like, that's quite idealistic. It doesn't tend to be that smooth. But as an example, and again, this is quite ideal, like quite fairly black and white, I guess. But if you are looking for financial security and, you know, just a security with someone, maybe that they have a home already, maybe that, you know, they've got a good job and, you know, just that sort of security. And that is an absolutely okay thing to look for in a person. That's not a bad thing. And I think if you're able to go, that is what I want and that's absolutely okay, but what else do I want on top of that and what don't I want, then you can focus on those things. Whereas I think if you're not able to accept that and be honest about it and just be okay with it, then you're kind of not able to think about the other things that you know may want or not want, because you're not thinking about it in that way. And I was also thinking back to, like, when you were talking, that I think there's an element of it, like, you know, like even a step before, where if you're stuck at home a lot because you're a single mom, and, you know, like, even if you co-parent, but, you know, if you don't co-parent, you haven't got money to do stuff. Weekends, if you're at home with your kid over the weekend and you haven't got money, that weekend is long. That is a long weekend. And if you're stuck in and, you know, your kid's four, like, let's be honest, like, I'm not engaging with my kid for 48 hours, because I mean, it's boring a lot of the time and annoying. Like, yeah. It's lovely and can be fun and can be all of these things, but also all of these other things. And so evenings, weekends, you can't afford to go out. You're at home with your kid. You know, you're more likely to be sat scrolling, right, on dating apps if you're dating and if you're looking to date. And you may be doing that to fill time, to fulfill, you know, to give yourself, you know, a buzz or whatever. Like, we all have our things, right? So some people binge Netflix, some people drink wine, whatever, some people do all of the things. But we know that, like, scrolling on dating apps is another way to give us, you know, that little bit of adrenaline and stuff that we crave. And also it blocks out things like loneliness or stress, anxiety, the crap things that we might be feeling, particularly loneliness in this context. And so you sit and scroll, and the reason why that's significant is because, and like, again, like, there's no judgment because we've all got these things, right? So it's not a judgment. But if you are sort of like sat scrolling and you're bored and you're lonely and, you know, you're not necessarily in this great mindset, you're kind of just blocking out other things or for, you know, filling time, fulfilling some sort of need. Again, like, it's not, well, it is about not always making right choices, but I think it's about, like, not necessarily making the right choices for you because you haven't, you're not coming from a place of you know, having thought about that and that having that be your priority.
Yeah.
So if you're kind of going into it being like, right, I'm dating, this is what I want, this is what I don't want, these are my hard lines, green flags, red flags, and I want this because I'm of X, Y, Z, and I'm very clear on this. I sound like I'm project management managing dating, which is probably exactly how I would approach it.
It's got to leave room.
It's a different approach.
Yeah. Loneliness obviously has a huge impact. I think the other thing that has a massive impact is self-esteem. So when you, you said, you know, when you read the newspaper and just don't do it. But if you did ever get into an argument with somebody on Facebook and just hearing the opinions, if you ever want to like harm yourself, then go to like the comment section under a Sun article about a mum who claims benefits, because like that would be where you would find extremely triggering things, and that can have a massive impact on your self-esteem. And we know like it doesn't seem like rocket science, but if you're dating from a position of low self-esteem, you're not going to make brilliant choices. You're going to lower your standards. You're going to sleep with people for validation that you don't necessarily want to sleep with. And you're going to just be on the lookout for anybody that might have you because you feel like shit. You know, despite saying, you know, these are all totally normal reasons to date somebody, I think it is important for us to take some responsibility for our self-esteem, and do as much as we can not to internalize those messages, recognize that there are loads of us in the same position, and work on ways of kind of helping to build our self-esteem, because dating when you feel crap about yourself is like the quickest way to make a dreadful choice and find yourself stuck with somebody who is not just bad for you.
And the same choices.
Yeah. Exactly. Or like you choices. Can't break out of your patterns and you keep dating the same person in slightly different clothes. So I think like working on our self-esteem, as hard as it is, and I'm not suggesting that we all need to like go on a huge self-development project, because, you know, God knows there's enough pressure on women and mums particularly to like be perfect across the board and to like, yeah, not need for anything and to be forever sacrificial and to like be sexually available and exciting, but also not like slutty or, you know, all of this stuff. But I do think that we need to nurture ourselves and be able to like support our self-esteem, knowing that it is taking like attacks, and being aware that it isn't you, like it is a society that is flinging mud at you, and to try and
absolutely
help yourself like develop some resilience to that and be like, this isn't really about me, these people don't know me, I'm just a stat here, and that's I'm not going to operate from that position. But obviously that's really, really hard. Do you have some advice for people who might recognize that they are, I mean, I'm not talking about the ones who maybe recognize that they're staying in an abusive thing. Like we can talk about that. I did do a whole podcast with somebody about how to safely leave an abusive relationship, because that in and of itself can be.
Yeah, that was a brilliant.
It can be really, really hard, and really, genuinely dangerous. But you know, for somebody who kind of goes like, oh God, I am dating this person for money and I don't want to be. I need to like find some resources to help alleviate this in some way. Like, do you have any, like, where would you send people to kind of find out a bit more about what is available to them in terms of support?
Yeah, and I guess firstly just to say is that like, yeah, if like you've kind of realized that like financial situation is part of it, and are you still there?
Yeah.
So let you you're frozen on me. Sorry. No, it's okay. I kind of want to say that like just that like that is okay. What I'm kind of saying is not great is that if you are with, you know, if you kind of realize that you're dating people or you're with someone for because you really need that security, or you know, you're kind of feeling that, I think like that's okay, but as long as they are giving you the other things as well. Like if you're dating someone or, you know, trying to date people and you are, you know, accepting things that are not acceptable because they're providing this other level of support, like that's the kind of thing that we're talking about. It's okay if like they're also giving you all of these other things.
Right.
I think it's about like, yeah, and it's about kind of going, you know, like this is part of this, you know, this is part of it and this is something that I want, but these are the other things I want as well, and making sure that you get those other things. And if you're not getting those other things, if somebody isn't right for you, if somebody isn't nice to you, if somebody isn't doing, you know, if somebody isn't behaving the way that they should or you want them to, but you know, they are a financial security, that's the kind of thing that we're talking about. And you know, what feeds into that, what I was thinking about is this whole thing of like how even before the cost of living crisis, you know, single mums are far more vulnerable to lowering standards and accepting, because they feel like anyone who wants me is good enough because I've got this baggage.
Which
I hate. And so I think that all feeds into it as well. And I think that's something to think about. Like, are you dating someone because you think that because they like you and they like you with a kid or several kids, that therefore that's enough as well, and they provide a home, you know, just thinking about that. But yeah, I think in terms of like real practical stuff, I guess if you know, depending on what your situation is, I would say to anyone, if you are not receiving universal credit, please do check that if you are entitled to any. It's really it's fairly straightforward to check. I don't know the links off the top of my head, but I'll let you know, Julia, so you can put them in the.
Yeah, of course.
But it's really easy to check. And when I did my speech at the House of Commons and I talked about universal credit, I had quite a few people reach out to me via social media and stuff, saying that, you know, they were in a similar situation to me with regards to work, etc., and they just didn't even think that they'd be entitled or to check universal credit, and that they, you know, sort of felt bad because they were working, so they didn't want to. So please, if you aren't already claiming, do check whether you might be entitled to universal credit. Obviously, if you are with someone at the moment and you are thinking of leaving them, find out what you would be eligible for by yourself and not in a joint claim. If you have a joint claim, it might be worth trying to find out what you would be eligible for if you were to be by yourself. And you can either do that from the calculator, the online calculator. There's a few. They're not done by the government. They're done by trusted organizations who are neutral. And if it's tricky for you to work out, then you can get in contact with Citizens Advice, who have a help to claim service which is dedicated to supporting people with their claim, particularly if it's complex and if you have questions or unsure. I know that sometimes people feel worried about like declaring different things at different points, and so if you're worried about any of that, then please do talk to someone at Citizens Advice. Like, that, you know, it's a free service, and those people are experts at trying to help people navigate through our very complex benefit system.
I mean, purposely obtuse, I think.
Do not let that put you off, because that is their aim. Don't let that put you off, because there is enough support out there to support you through it. So yeah, don't let that put you off. Gingerbread as a single parent charity, and they do a lot of advocacy work and campaigning, but they also do have a helpline, and it's dedicated that, you know, Gingerbread works with single parents. That is their you know, main thing, and they have a helpline, and you can call about debts, you can call about benefits, you can call about relationship breakups, divorce, co-parenting arrangements, all of those kind of things, they have a helpline, a free helpline, and that support is available. And then I think, yeah, I guess it's just worth looking at what other support might be available. And I say that like it's just an easy thing to do. And the reason why I'm a bit vague about it is because more and more support is kind of cropping up now off the back of the cost of living crisis. And different people are going to be entitled to different things. So lots of charities and organizations are sort of doing their own one-off grants for certain groups of people. And, you know, people listening to this podcast, they're not just going to be single mums. You know, they might fall into other sort of groups and categories where they might be entitled to further support. And I know that that's quite vague, but what I think is important for people to know is that there is, and I'm not saying that there's an abundance of support because there isn't, but there is more support available kind of coming up through, individual sort of like charities and places. Citizens Advice is always a good place to start because they deal with so many things that, you know, whether it's a breakup, whether it's debt, whether it's money, whether it's housing, that you know, they are starting to open up back face to face. I know that they have a bad reputation in terms of like their phone lines being very busy, but that is getting better. That is improving. They've invested a lot of money in the pandemic into being able to answer more calls. So if you can be, if you do have some time, it's definitely worth contacting them. And that some of their services are opening up face to face now as well, which might be a bit easier.
Yeah, I think, and also like when you talk to Citizen Advice, at least you're dealing with something local. So you might have like an advantage in your area that isn't national. So I know that when I was looking for childcare, it turned out that the council that I live in had, you know, additional hours available under certain circumstances, and things like that. So it's worth like really looking at what's available in your local facility as well as like the big national things. It is frustrating, and I wanted to just put a highlight on that because of the way these systems work. It takes a really long time, which is so far from okay. But then all of this is so far from okay. But yeah, it is worth just making a little bit of a nuisance of yourself in some ways and just being like, explain it to me. Because I found, you know, even like Universal Credit, I remember we just got a sanction and nobody explained what it was about. But when I argued it, it turned out that it was an error.
Yeah.
It was an error. Similarly with like EDF, they started just taking money out of my account and it turned out again, it was an error. And then they refunded it. But it took me days, hours, you know, it's not all right, but that is the kind of state of things at the minute.
And listen, you know, I know, like, again, you know, sometimes I think, I mean, even down to like the amount of sort of capacity and energy that you have in you to fight these things can be a privilege sometimes. Exactly. And you know, the fact that, you know, when how you might be received as a white woman trying to fight and argue these things might be completely different to like a black woman, and so I get that when I'm kind of saying, you know, fight for this and look for this and apply for this. And I know that that takes like strength and energy. And if you're also thinking about leaving a relationship and then you just go, oh my God, it's just easier to stay. But I think that, you know, I'll say it again, like, I'm not saying that there's an abundance of support out there, but there is support and there is people that you can talk to who are experts in this. And then the other thing I would just say to support with that side of things in terms of having the emotional and mental sort of capacity and energy to deal with it is to start building up your support networks. Start now. And so even if you think, do you know what, I'm not going to leave for another 3 months, or I'm not going to even think about this for another 3 months, go and start building up your support network in different ways. And again, like, we've obviously talked about how the cost of living crisis is impacting on our ability to do that. But if it is through, you know, this is where social media can be great for all of its flaws. If it's different support groups, different Facebook groups, find people who have maybe been through your situation who can support you or inspire you or motivate you, you know, or just hold your hand, just kind of be there. Yeah. And it doesn't have to be huge groups. Your network doesn't have to be huge. It can just be a few people. But I think that that is, and but if they've been through it, you know, because I think agencies, you know, like Gingerbread and stuff, they're experts and they're definitely there for you and will provide, you know, an excellent level of support. But there's something else that you maybe need beyond that, right? Because that's just this person on the end of the phone who doesn't really know you. And sometimes it's that person that goes, just ring them. Can you ring them? Because I rang them and it was really helpful. Or, you know, I'll sit with you while you do the, you know, or why don't we go on a Zoom one night and we'll have a glass of wine and we'll figure out your budget or how much money you're going to need. And if you already have a network, if you have, you know, a few trusted people that you can start talking to them about and just be honest about the things I'm saying, just be honest, like it's the easiest thing in the world. But, you know, if you can say, even if it's one person you trust, this is the thing that I'm thinking about, or I've been thinking about this, or this is what I want to do. I don't know how to go about it. Can you help me? And I know that that might be easy if difficult if you're living with someone. You know, I get that none of this is, you know, as easy as.
No, and I think like just to sort of add to that a little bit, it's really important that we are not hugely judgmental of ourselves.
Absolutely.
Like as you've highlighted, this is going to be difficult for people in different ways. And also the effects on the impacts in your dating life will be very different, like whether that's you know, not leaving a marriage because you can't afford to, or it's just as small as, oh, I go out every Saturday night on a date because then I get a hot meal. You know, like that our relationship to this is going to be completely different. And just recognizing that you are not the issue, that the issue is bigger than you and your choices. And it affects everyone in a different way. But, you know, just to be kind of kind to yourself and be like, I'm not the only one doing this. I'm not the only one finding this hard. I'm not the only one that needs to reach out for help and support. Like, yeah, that's sort of like the grace that we need to give ourselves. Absolutely. In this time of crisis is huge.
And I think where you may want to, you know, look, take some responsibility and start looking at yourself and what is going on for you and your choices in all of this, because I do think that at a point there is that is an important part of it, or in my experience it certainly has been. But I think that grace comes before all of these things and has to continue to be there, and you have to give yourself that grace. Know, as you said, that, like, you know, you're not alone and other people are going through these things, and it isn't as straightforward as you've made this choice because of X, Y, and Z. There's so many things that feed into it. And part of that will be, you know, things to do with you and things that you've experienced in the past. And then some of it is going to be, very much external factors and, you know, things that society has put on you. In my experience, it's kind of never that black and white. So give yourself grace around that and just, I think if you don't do it with grace, then it becomes a really hard thing to do. And I think self-acceptance becomes really hard. And then and sort of that sort of level of self-awareness and taking responsibility, like, it kind of just, it doesn't really, it becomes harder to do all of those things if you're not giving yourself the sort of compassion and grace that you deserve.
Right, exactly. We've all dated people for all different reasons. And, you know, you don't have to get this right immediately. This is, you know, this is your life. This is one life that we get. And, you know, we're all on a kind of on a journey. I hate that phrase. But like, it is a journey. Like, your romantic life's a journey. Your career's a journey. And your relationship to that around being a parent, it takes time. And that's okay. I think Well, we've talked a long time. It's been amazing. I just
would be any different.
I just want to say thank you so much for coming and sharing this with us, because these are just like, I do honestly feel like this is such an important conversation to be having at the moment, and just bringing as much awareness to it as we possibly can. So thank you so much for joining me. Where can everyone come and find you if they want a little bit more Carly in their lives?
Well, good luck to you. No, the normal places. So I'm on Instagram at Carly Newman Here, and then I am on Facebook just as me, Carly Newman, and I do also have a group for mums. It is mixed, but it's predominantly single mums, but I have a few non-single mums in there as well, and mums who have been single and are not single now but stayed in the group. And it's not a huge group, but I find it's like a really safe and just kind community that I post in regularly. I go live once a week talking about different topics. And I think that even though, it's not like a huge space, it's a space that I probably enjoy the most being in. So if anyone is looking for that support, then yes, I have a group on Facebook called Mum Powerment. So you should just be able to search for that or find it via me, and I'm just Carly Newman on
And I'll be putting all of your links and things into the show notes, so you can just pop down there and go and check out Carly and all the amazing work she's doing around a full-time job and mothering a four-year-old. So massive hats off. And thank you so much for joining us. It's been brilliant.
Thank you for having me. Yeah, it has. It's been really good to talk about these things and just think about it as well. So thank you, Julia.